Negative ads, personal attacks, outside groups, all impugning the character of the candidates, have been a part of this year's presidential campaign. This has led some observers to lament that the country's politics is in a downward spiral. Others believe this election has generated a good, healthy campaign, solidly in the tradition of American democracy. NPR's John Idsty has more.
There's no question this presidential campaign is intense, with its share of negative, sarcastic, and even downright nasty moments.
He said it was the right decision to go into Iraq, yet now he calls it the wrong war. I think he could spend 90 minutes debating himself.
I usually wind up coming down here. I never get time to visit Fantasyland, but if you want to visit it, you can just go see the Bush White House. That's where they are living in fantasy.
The vice presidential candidates took their shots, sitting toe-to-toe in their debate.
Senator, frankly, you have a record in the Senate that's not very distinguished. You've missed 33 out of 36 meetings of the Judiciary Committee, almost 70% of the meetings of the Intelligence Committee.
The vice president, I'm surprised to hear him talk about records. When he was one of 435 members of the United States House, he was one of 10 to vote against Head Start. He voted against funding for Meals on Wheels for seniors.
And when it wasn't the candidates themselves, it was outside groups, the infamous 527s, launching ads like these.
In a time of war, can America trust a man who betrayed his country? Swiftboat Veterans for Truth is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
George Bush walked away from his duty to the nation and to the National Guard. His father got him into the Guard and out of the Guard. Mr. President, you owe our...
John Dierdorf, a former consultant for moderate Republicans, saw a lot of campaigns in his three decades of consulting.
This campaign is about as venomous as you can get. I don't see how it could be much nastier.
Political science professor Richard Schur of the University of Florida says on a 10-point nastiness scale, this campaign rates 9.5.
It's extremely nasty. The language of the campaign is... It's very high voltage, it's very confrontational, and these two guys are at each other's throats.
But two campaign professionals see it differently. Paul Begala helped Bill Clinton get elected twice.
Maybe a 6 on a scale of 10. There's really only been one nasty moment that I think people will remember in years to come when they look back, and that is when all of a sudden a new group, it's called Swiftboat Veterans for Truth, came out and suggested that John Kerry didn't deserve his medals.
Republican political consultant Mike Murphy thinks that ad was defensible and that this campaign is pretty normal.
Any passionate close campaign will be seen as nasty because it's highly competitive. And when it gets highly competitive, the two sides start talking about each other. Let's put it this way. By American history standards, it's a pretty clean campaign.
Mudslinging is nothing new in American politics. Full-throated character assassination was practiced in the earliest presidential campaigns. John Adams supporters charged that women would be attacked by rapacious mobs if Thomas Jefferson were elected. Politics did tend to get more civil in the middle of the 20th century, says MIT political science professor Stephen Ansola Behar. He says that's partly because the Democrats' control of Congress was largely unthreatened between 1930 and 1980. Then things changed.
Beginning with the Reagan election, competition for Congress and the presidency became more intense. And it was this sort of division between the parties and the sense that the Republicans might at any time gain control of more than one branch of government that really intensified the partisan battles.
Richard Viguerie was one of the architects of the conservative revolution that culminated with the current Republican control of the White House and Congress. He says the stakes today make the current election one of the meanest of the modern era. But Viguerie says he's not ready to go back to civility if it means compromise.
We could have an end to the polarization in this country very quickly if Republicans and conservatives would accede to the Democrats' wishes and grow government and expand it, and liberals would like that, and there would be a more civil tone. But conservatives are determined that their ideas should prevail, and I think that is not a bad thing.
Viguerie says the intense, sometimes impolite debate energizes people and gets them involved. Florida professor Schur agrees, and he credits the right wing with reinvigorating the political debate in the early 1980s, just as the left did in the 1960s.
It may be that it takes some group, whether it's from the right or the left, to reinvent and reinvigorate the language of American politics from generation to generation. Otherwise, we all just sort of go to sleep, and that's bad for us.
One of the most powerful ideas that conservatives pushed in the 1980s was that government was too big. It's an idea that lends itself to negative campaigning and denigration of public officials, says John Deardorff, the former Republican ad man.
The Reagan years ushered in a very strong sort of anti-government point of view. People were told that government was not an ally, but was an impediment to progress, and that the smaller the government, the better.
Some scholars agree that dissatisfaction with government has helped drive negative campaigning. They say it usually works better for Republicans than Democrats, since Democrats tend to view government as a solution. Consultant Mike Murphy, whose star client is California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, has another view. He says the current style of negative attack politics blossomed in the late 1980s.
I blame both sides, but I give a special extra speeding ticket to the activist left. Because when they ran the anti-Bork campaigns, and when we started tearing up Supreme Court justices in the court of public opinion with essentially negative attacks and even advertising, I think that kind of begun the spiral, and that was in the late 80s.
It was the summer of 1987, to be exact, when Ronald Reagan's Supreme Court nominee, Robert Bork, was defeated in the Senate. That was after 5 days of scorching Senate hearings and a negative advertising campaign that decried Bork's views on abortion and on the rights of racial and ethnic minorities. But it's the 1988 presidential campaign that tops many lists as the original launchpad for modern presidential attack politics. As MIT political science professor Ansola Behar explains, Lee Atwater was running the campaign of the first President Bush. His opponent was Michael Dukakis, then the Democratic governor of Massachusetts. Atwater said he was going to win by, quote, scraping the bark off that little bastard.
And it was decided by Atwater and others that they were just going to have to attack Dukakis if they were going to eradicate his lead in the polls, which he held coming out of the Democratic convention. And every campaign since has really followed a very similar script of out of the gates from the conventions, the campaigns really start going negative.
George H.W. Bush caught and beat Michael Dukakis with the help of the racially charged Willie Horton ad that implied Governor Dukakis was soft on crime. It was sponsored by an outside organization, a model for this year's 527 groups. Dukakis lost partly because he did not adequately respond to Republican attacks. But the success of Bush's negative campaign convinced political consultants on both sides that negative works. Now, says Ansola Behar, it's nearly impossible for a candidate to avoid the negative road, especially if he's attacked first.
Candidates are seen as weakest when they're promoting themselves and their opponent is attacking. And so the only way to really counteract negative ads is yourself to go negative. If you get punched, the best thing to do is punch back. And that is, I think, common wisdom among the political consultants, and it turns out to be sadly true.
And Ansola Behar says, while negative attacks may raise turnout among partisans, they reduce the number of independents who go to the polls because they're turned off by the negativity. Lee Atwater may have elevated negative campaigning to new levels, but his apprentice, Karl Rove, carries on. Former Republican ad man John Deardorff says Rove, who runs the current President Bush's campaign, is following Atwater's script.
It seemed to me that the campaign's goal, the Bush campaign, was not so much to win the election or even to defeat Kerry as it was to really destroy him and to somehow assassinate his character.
Deardorff worked with Rove on several campaigns in the 1980s and 90s. He says Karl Rove's style is to devastate an opponent, not just defeat him. But Democratic campaign consultants have also embraced the take-no-prisoner style. James Carville, President Clinton's political Svengali, once said, "It's hard for someone to punch you if you already have your fist in their face." Carville's former partner, Paul Begala, is an ex-consultant now. His main job, along with Carville, is to represent the liberal point of view on CNN's Crossfire.
I love attack politics, but again, for me, it's got to be about issues and ideas.
Isn't it corrosive?
No, it's great. So long as it's factual, fair, on the public record. I think that's what people mean. They say negative. I like negative if it's true, if it's factual, if it's from the public record.
There's a surprising amount of agreement on this, that factual attack advertising can be good for voters. The theory is it helps them differentiate between the candidates. Professor Kathleen Hall Jamieson tracks campaign advertising and rhetoric at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School of Communication.
Attack ordinarily is not dirty and can be legitimate and important, but this year there has been a high level of inaccuracy in the attack, which is historically unusual. Historically, attack is more accurate.
What Jamieson calls a habitual pattern of distortion has made this election very problematic. For example, she says, the Republicans have misrepresented Senator Kerry's health care proposal. Meanwhile, President Bush's Social Security proposal has been distorted by the Democrats. And the candidates' distortions are only amplified by an exploding media environment of cable TV news, internet blogs, and talk radio. The subject recently came up on CNN's Crossfire. Paul Begala and his co-host Tucker Carlson got an unsolicited critique from Jon Stewart, host of the fake news program The Daily Show on Comedy Central.
You're doing theater when you should be doing debate.
There's no reason for you, when you have this marvelous opportunity not to be the guy's butt boy, to go ahead and be his butt boy.
Yes,
God,
no.
It's embarrassing.
I was absolutely...
With that level of mud and distortion, we may all wish for a collective bath after this election is over, and it may make it hard for whomever wins to unite the country and govern. But there are some bright spots. One is that media fact-checking and issues pieces have improved markedly during this election, according to Professor Jamieson. Also, there's a general agreement that the presidential debate stood out as a model for campaign discourse. John Idsty, NPR News, Washington.